You're listening to the Inside the Mix podcast with your host, Mark Matthews.
Hello and welcome to the Inside the Mix podcast. I'm Mark Matthews, your host, musician, producer, and mix and mastering engineer. You've come to the right place if you want to know more about your favorite synth music artists, music engineering and production, songwriting, and the music industry. I've been writing, producing, mixing, and mastering music for over 15 years, and I want to share what I've learned with you. So welcome to the Inside the Mix podcast, and in today's episode I'm joined by Luis Delte, and he is one third of Spanish outfit Max Thor. In this episode we'll be discussing the birth of Max Thor, the latest single Far Away, and also an up-and-coming single as well, and the similarities and differences between songwriting for documentaries, Spanish pop, and Max Thor. So Luis, thank you for joining me today. How are you?
Thank you. I'm well, thank you for having me in your podcast.
It's my pleasure. So this is for the audience listening, this is the first episode of series two. So we've been out of action for a few months. So I'm eager to get things going again. So can you just tell our audience where you're joining us from today?
I'm from Spain and I live in Alicante, on the coast.
Fantastic. Much brighter than it is over here in the UK.
Yeah,
so I've got your bio here, so I'll just briefly run through it for our audience. So forging a broad spectrum of influences, you take the irresistible echoes of 80s giants like Phil Collins, the EP behind me. We were discussing off air our Phil Collins EP, Billy Idol and Survivor, great influences, and filters them through the lens of synth-driven futuristic nostalgia. I love that description. Intoxicating, insanely catchy melodies, songs, beautifully crafted and drowned in the electronic atmosphere and synth pop hooks. There's metal, Italo-disco, and retro aesthetics in the mix. It's a cocktail of sounds that makes Max Thor a truly unique proposition. That is a fantastic description, I must say. I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I was just going through your social media earlier today, and so you've got a new single. We'll touch on that a bit later. But for our audience, can you just tell us the name of the new single, when it's going to be coming out?
The new single is coming out this week on Friday 18. It's called She's Out of This World. And yes, a new single is more like Italo Disco with sax on it. So yeah, very excited to share it.
Fantastic, man. What I'll do is, depending on when this episode goes live, I'll obviously put links to all your social media websites and also links to the songs as well and the new song. Great. So what I'd like to do, Luis, is just start off with a bit of a background of yours. So life before Max Thor. So can you tell our audience a bit about your musical life prior to Max Thor? So how did you get into music? What inspired you to be a creative?
Well, so I started at a very young age. I'm a drummer. My main instrument is drums. So I used to play in metal bands. I was like really deep into the metal world.
Yeah.
Especially in extreme metal. That's what I really like. But I'm also open to all kind of styles. I always loved 80s music. I love, I don't know, classical music, world music. So I started when I was 15, 16, playing drums in a band. And later I became interested in music production. So I started using the computer and I decided to start my own project. Like a thing, I had the complete control of it, like writing the music, mixing, mastering, like everything. So that's why I started Max Thor. But as I told you, mainly I've been always interested in writing songs. I really like songwriting, and I started with bands, and then I fell in love with studio work.
Yeah, I know that feeling. It's so interesting. This is a common theme. And I say this pretty much every episode, I think, when I talk to other artists about their influences and their backgrounds. And it's the metal theme again. Yeah, like, I'm sure the audience listening now know that I'm from a metal background as well. But metal seems to be almost synonymous now with like our style of music, which is amazing.
Yeah, man. Even all the producers working now in the States, like making pop, like Max Martin, those guys, everyone was involved into metal, so yeah. I don't know what
yeah
what's the explanation of that.
there's a nice crossover there somewhere, and it's great because the music coming out is fantastic. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because when I was listening back through your stuff on SoundCloud, I didn't tweak initially, but then a song came on. I was like, hold on, I recognize that. And it was Wasted Years by Iron Maiden.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, all right, yeah, here we go. It's another metalhead turned synth artist, you know. But a great cover nonetheless. One of my favorite Maiden songs too.
Thank you. Yeah, it was not easy to decide which one to pick up, because I've always wanted to do a Iron Maiden cover.
Mm.
And I was trying to figure out which track was the ideal for that. And finally, I picked Wasted Years. But Iron Maiden is a band I really love. It's the band that started me into the metal. So
yeah.
I love that band.
I got a friend of mine in a band I was previously in who's a massive, massive Maiden fan. He's a bassist, though. He's Steve Harris-style bass. He plays bass like an animal. I don't quite know how he does it. Shout out to Matt if you're listening. Yeah, so Wasted Years. So on that track, are you playing guitar on that track, or is that one of the other guys?
I'm playing everything on Maxtor. I mean, although we are a three-member band, the thing is that all the music in Maxtor is written and performed by me.
Oh, wow.
And the band is just a live band.
Oh.
I mean, we only act as a band when we play live. But all the work, Maxtor music, the songwriting, like lyrics, and I play guitars, saxophone, I sing, I do like all the stuff, and the band is just for the live shows.
Man, that's impressive. That was one of my questions future on, so future down the line, we'll circle back to this, but I was going to ask you about the guitar, the saxophone, the singing, and who does what, but we'll come back to that shortly. But I... Multi-instrumentalist, man, that's super impressive.
Yeah, the thing is that I'm mainly a drummer, but there are not like real drums in Maxtor songs, because it's electronic drums, so my main instrument is not being played there, and I'm playing the other instruments.
The irony. So you're a drummer, but you don't actually play drums, you play everything else but drums.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So go back to life, like when you got into music. Can you tell our audience a bit about like your... So you mentioned that you played metal and extreme metal. Just before I go on to the next question, like so what sort of extreme metal? Can you give us like an example?
Yeah, mainly it was black metal, was the kind of metal that especially Nordic metal. Everything like death melodic metal, black metal.
Yeah.
But... As I told you, I always like heavy metal, like Iron Maiden, even Blind Guardian, all kinds of metal. But black metal was like my first passion.
As
a listener.
Like Dimmu Borgir, like Cradle of Filth.
I was a really huge fan of Cradle of Filth.
Yeah, good old Danny Filth.
I saw them live a couple of times.
Did you?
I don't really like what they are doing now, but the first three albums are, I love them.
Yeah, was it A Ghost in the Fog? That song, that's a quality song. I think it's called that. I'm sure it is. Ghost in the Fog.
That one is from the latest albums. The first album, The Principle of Evil Made Flesh, Empire, and Dusk and Her Embrace was the last one of the good phase of Cradle of Filth, but love that band. Very original.
When you saw them live, I don't know if they were doing it then. Was it at the point whereby, I know, if I remember rightly, they had like these artists on stage with angle grinders who would like have a metal plate and they would use angle grinders against themselves. I don't know. I'm fairly certain that happened. I'm fairly certain it did. What?
I don't know. When I went to a Cradle of Filth gig like more like 25 years ago or 20 years ago, a long time ago.
Maybe this is a bit later then. I'll tell you what, off air after this, I'm going to go look this up. I'm sure that happened. I'm sure it did. But it's probably like later, further down the line. So you mentioned you got into like extreme metal and metal. So can you remember like the first song that really got you into... or inspired you to start creating music? Was there like a song or an album or maybe an artist?
I think the first album that really got me into music was Fear of the Dark by Iron Maiden.
Ah, cool.
And also Manowar. I really loved Manowar in that yeah. that time. Yeah.
Yeah,
the Dream
yeah.
of Steel, that album is great. And yeah, that was the first album I started to listening on repeat. Like, man, I really, because at first it sounded like noise to me. I didn't understand what was going on. Like, okay, this is noisy. I don't understand what what is happening over there, what the drummer is doing. But when you start listening to it on repeat, you start appreciating, I don't know, the skills of the musicians there, the melodies, the harmonies. So, yeah, maybe I would say Fear of the Dark was one of the most important albums as an influence for me.
Yeah, it's a great album, isn't it? And it's interesting you mentioned there about how, like, when you first listen to certain metal and, like, heavy metal, hard rock and that sort of thing, and it starts out as noise. And I think when I play songs to people who don't generally listen to metal, that's what they hear. They just say, oh, it just sounds like noise. But once you get beyond that, you actually listen to the artistry and the musicianship and everything and the songwriting and the composition that goes into it, you realize, actually, this is, like, really, really impressive. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, man, and the same happens. I remember the first time I listened to non-melodic vocals, like growling vocals, was Sepultura.
Oh, yeah, nice.
The Brazilian band. Mm. And I hated it. It was like, what the fuck is this? Like,
yeah.
He's screaming. I didn't understand why someone could like that. And finally, you learn to appreciate that kind of vocals. It's not easy to get into those vocals, but you learn that it's more about texture and expression. That's melody is not the only important things in vocals. So it's another way of expressions, but it takes time. It happens like, I mean, jazz music is the same. You need to understand, it's a different language and you need to learn to understand it.
Yeah, that's a really, really good way of putting it, a really articulate way of putting it. It is like another language, and it takes time to understand that language. Yeah, I totally agree. And I went through the same phase. I think the first, what did I listen to? I think it was Cannibal Corpse. And initially listened to it, and I was just like, man, this is way too extreme for me. But now, further down the line, having been in bands and stuff, I've watched Cannibal Corpse in Bristol, and it's like one of the best gigs I ever went to. I love it now. It's great. And I remember the proper first band that I listened to with growling or screaming in was Killswitch Engage, End of Heartache, which is like the metalcore era of like the early noughties. But they're very much the same. And it is, you learn to appreciate the emotion that goes into those vocals and the music.
Yeah, man. And there's such a huge variety of growling singing because... Mm. You have high-pitched vocals, like really deep growls, and every singer has his own like texture and personality. It's amazing.
Yeah, I totally agree, mate. I totally agree. So moving on to sort of like the birth of Max Thorth. So you mentioned there, one of my questions was going to be, where did you meet Pablo? And I'm assuming Joaquin's got the same surname. So is he your brother? Is he a cousin, relative?
It's my real brother.
Yeah.
It's my younger brother.
Yeah. So then... Going back to what you said earlier, so you do all, you're the multi-instrumentalist, you do all the, you're the songwriter, the recording artist as well, and they are just there to perform live with you.
Yeah, because the thing was, I didn't plan to play live shows with Max Thor, but like 3-4 years ago, they asked me to play in London in Retro Future Fest.
Oh, cool.
And... I said no at first, but then I started to think, okay, let's play live. But I didn't want to play like me alone in the stage with all the music in the background, like a karaoke. That didn't make sense. So yeah, I asked my brother Joaquin, who plays keyboards, and Pablo is a really good friend of mine. In fact, It's a funny thing because I met Pablo because of my favorite ever band, who is Opeth. You know Opeth?
Oh, yeah, Michael Akerfeld, yeah.
Okay, so Pablo is the cousin of the bass player in Opeth.
No.
Martin Mendez.
Yeah.
And I went to an Opeth concert in Spain, and I was talking to Martin fanboying, and he said, "Hey man, my cousin is living there in Alicante, and he just arrived. He's looking for like some friends, and okay, and now he's one of my best friends." Yeah.
Oh, amazing! That's so cool. It's like proper three degrees of separation. That's amazing.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's so great. Yeah, it's got so many questions now to ask about Opeth, but that's a total tangent, and it's going off on a tangent in itself. So with regards to taking your music to the live arena, did you find it quite an easy thing to do? What were the challenges there to take your, what's essentially a studio project then into, and then have it turned into a live animal?
Yeah, so it was really challenging, and it wasn't easy at all. First, because I was used to play live, but as a drummer, and the good thing when you play drums is you are in the back of the stage.
Mm-hmm.
You have the cymbals in front of you, and you are not exposed. So it was the first time I had to sing and play guitar at the same time. So that was pretty challenging. But I don't know. Once you start singing, is you're nervous like the first minute, and then you're perfect. And technically, it was difficult because we wanted to play every part live, but it was impossible because there are a lot of layers and track in every master song. So part of it is we played some background music, the electronic bass, some layer synth, and we have the vocals, guitar, keyboards, and drums live. So it's a mix between a electronic setup and live setup.
Wow. Yeah, there's quite a lot to take in there, isn't it? It's quite a lot to do because it's a conversation. Now, like, we're coming, I don't know what it's like in Spain, but we're coming out the other side of this pandemic, and like bands are now, and live music is hopefully going to continue to reopen. And I'm talking to more and more artists about how they're taking they want to take their sort of projects on the road and perform live. And I think it's going to be a topic of conversation for quite a few of these podcast interviews that I have now. I know I've got one coming up with an artist called Daniel Hugh, and we're going to be going through like how he's taking his live. And I think Zach Vortex is also doing the same. And you see all these artists and the challenges. It'd be nice. I'd quite like to do the same, do it myself at one point, but way further down the line. But how did you get were you approached then to play the festival in the UK? Is that the one in London? Is that right?
Yeah, it was in London like 3 years ago. It was the year before the pandemic.
Mm.
Now everything you say like before or after the pandemic. So yeah, it was in June, I think, 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah. We played that show, and then we played some months after that, we play another show with Nina and another Spanish artist, Sunesis, in Barcelona.
Yeah.
And that was January, and that was the last one we play. After that, pandemic and no more shows.
Nina, that's good, though. Nina's awesome. How was that kid?
It was great, and she's a really nice girl. She and Laura, they are amazing. Really, really cool people.
Yeah, I bet. Oh, jealous much? That sounds amazing. That's pretty good. So that was your second gig then?
We just played two gigs, like London and Barcelona.
That's not bad, man. That's pretty good going for your first two gigs.
Yeah,
play. So the name Max Thor, I'm not going to attempt to roll my ass. Where does that name come from? Does it have a specific meaning?
Yeah, so it's a fun story because Max Thor came. There was a TV show in Spain in the 90s. It was called El Juego de la Oca. I think in English it's called like the goose game. It's like a board game.
Okay.
I don't know. The game of the goose, maybe.
Is it a board game? Is it there is a game?
Yeah, it's like a board game, but they did that in television. So at some point you get to a place where you have to have like you have to face a guy that was called Maxtor, and it was just a guy dressed as a cyborg, as a robot,
but
it was super lame. So it was like, but I really love that name. It sounds to me like Maxtor, man. That sounds super powerful. And I was 12, 14 years old. And I need to use that name sometimes. So when I started this project, I say, okay, Maxtor, that's right. And that's the only funny thing about Maxtor, because there's no jokes or fun in my lyrics, or it's super serious. Like, but the origin of the name is fun.
Yeah. No, you've mentioned, like, you give me the story, like you say, the actual name sounds really cool, and I wouldn't have associated it with something that like that. You know, I'm trying to. When this episode's done, I'm going to go away and think about what games in English involve a goose. There is one game, but it does involve a board. It's called Duck Duck Goose, and you basically go around in a circle and touch someone on the head until you say goose, and then they chase you. But I don't think that's the one. I don't think that's it. There's no Maxtor. Let's take a quick break from this episode so that I can tell you about a free resource that I made for you. It's a PDF checklist that describes what you need to do to properly prepare a mix for mastering. So you've done the hard work and you love your mix, yet suitably preparing a mix for mastering is often overlooked by musicians, resulting in delayed sessions, excessive back and forth conversation, and frustration on both parts. I want to help fix that. So if you want this free resource, just go to www.synthmusicmastering.com, as this checklist will help and guide you to make the mastering process as smooth, transparent, and exciting as possible. So again, the URL is www.synthmusicmastering.com for this free Preparing a Mix for Mastering checklist. Let's get back to the episode. So my final sort of question about the birth of Maxtor is, like, did you have an initial goal for the project, and has that changed over time?
The thing is, I think that the goal is still the same now, because when I started Maxtor, I didn't even plan to share it with people. I just wanted to learn some music production and do my own stuff. And also, especially creating music, I wanted to listen to, but I couldn't find anywhere. So that kind of mix. So I just did it for fun. And now it's the same to me. I don't, my yeah. only goal is making better songs each time. If every time I write a new song, I analyze it and think, okay, this one is better. I mean, it sounds better. I always want a better sound, like better structure, better songwriting. So it's like challenging myself. But I don't have any goal like, okay, I want to reach 1 million Spotify listeners. I don't care about that, because what makes me happy is being here in my studio working, and when you finish a song and you listen to it and, okay, this sound great. That's the goal for me of making music.
We'll be right back.
So I've got a hunch about a common struggle we all face: mastering. If you're an independent artist or music producer, you've probably encountered the frustration of masters that just don't hit the mark, right? They lack balance and refuse to play nicely across different devices and environments. Ever found yourself wondering, why don't my masters sound like my references? Perhaps you've spent countless hours attempting to master your tracks only to be unsatisfied with the results. Maybe you've tried every silver bullet plugin, or even dabbled in AI. Or perhaps you're already working with an engineer, but you're eager to explore different possibilities. Well, here's the solution you've been searching for: Synth Music Mastering. I'm offering a game-changing opportunity with a one-time free test master for a limited time. Picture elevating your music with my unwavering commitment to quality and a personalized touch that you just don't get with the big mastering studios. The best part, it won't cost you a penny. Just submit your finished mix and let's see how we can transform your music together. Don't let mastering be a mystery any longer. Say goodbye to the frustration and step into a world of sonic excellence. Grab your free test master now. Click the link in the episode description or head over to synthmusicmastering.com. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think, yeah, for like when it comes to me writing music and making music as well, I just do it because I enjoy doing it. And like you say, each song you sort of progress and you learn and you get better each time. And I think once you put a value or a statistic in mind, like you say, I want to reach 1 million streams or I want to get X amount of followers and stuff, I think you lose sight of actually what you're doing. You're just trying to, I think you can easily lose sight of that creativity. And it can then it can possibly become quite, I don't know, like a part-time job then in a way. Like, you know, if it is just a goal someone set
and
you.
And most of...
I think you can lose sight.
Of the people quit music because of that, because they are anxious to be successful or... Imagine that. I've been playing music since I was 15 and I started like working as a professional because now I work as a mixing and mastering engineer. I compose like for, I do music, scores, but I started when I was 35, like making a living out of music. And that's because I loved music and I just keep doing it because of the fun of it. And that's important. Like, if you like it, keep doing it. Of course, it's great when people like your music. And when I release a song and someone texts me like, hey, I love your new track, that's amazing, of course. But that doesn't need to be your main goal, never.
Yeah, I think that's really cool, man. And I think it's great that you mention, like, age isn't a barrier either. Like you mentioned there, like you're 35, which is still young. I mean, I'm 35. I like to think I'm still quite young.
I'm not 35. I mean, when I was 35, I started like making a living. Now I'm 43, man.
You look really good for 43. I'll give you that. But no, even like you mentioned there. So basically you became like a professional in the industry at 35. So it's kind of saying to the audience, I guess, like even if it doesn't happen in your early 20s or whenever, and you think, I'm in my 30s, I've got a knock on the head now, I've got to go and get another job because it's not going to happen. It's great that, I think there was another interview I had with another artist, and I can't remember who it was, but they were in a similar position. They didn't crack into the music industry and become a professional into their mid-30s as well. And I think it's like you say, if you don't put a statistic in front of you that you need to aim for, you just keep knocking, you just keep writing music and doing what you're doing, and eventually
that's what I did. I had like regular jobs, I work at, I don't know, I had a lot of jobs, and in the weekends I spend the weekend making music, and so doing it, you don't surrender.
That's great, man. That's a great message to send out. So going on now to sort of like the songwriting side of things. So you mentioned there that you mix and master as well. But what I'd like to just delve into is the songwriting process. So, I mean, if we look at the track sort of Far Away, how it, and we'll come on to the new one in a bit. How does a songwriting session start with you? Like, do you start with an initial idea or do you just pick up an instrument and just start noodling away? How does the songwriting process start?
So usually, like, 70 or 80% of the time, it starts with a melody. I'm just like walking my dog or doing whatever, and a melody comes to mind, and I picture the whole song in my head and just try to make it happen. But with this track with Far Away, it was pretty different because I just wanted to make an up-tempo song. I say, okay, let's try to do a song that it goes really fast and with that kind of beat. I was really inspired by Billy Idol style. Like, it sounds like very like powerful, like music for driving at night. So I started with the beat and I said, okay, let's make a nice beat, an up-tempo beat. And then I started writing melodies. One thing I always started is with chord progressions. because that really get me started, like finding a nice chord progression that doesn't sound too cliche. It's a great start point for me always.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to start. And I very much do the same when it comes to songwriting. When you have that initial idea, do you do the thing where you're out and about where if you have an idea, do you like sing into your phone or anything like that and record audio messages?
Oh, yeah. I use the voice notes all the time. But if you listen to it, it's like, so this is this song, okay? I'm whistling I use it all the time.
Amazing. So with regards to your music production then, I just want to delve a bit deeper into that then. Out of interest, what DAW do you use for your productions? Do you use one or do you use several?
I'm using Ableton Live.
Ah, nice. Do you use that live as, ironically, do you use it live as well?
It's great for that.
Yeah.
I've never used another one. I know how Pro Tools or Logic works, but Ableton Live is really intuitive. You can learn by yourself, just trying things, and I'm using that for the live show because it's really easy to launch clips, and it's amazing for that.
Nice. It's one DAW I tried once. And I never went back to, but it's one of those ones where it's kind of like a goal. I say goal. It is an aim of mine to have a go at it again, but it's just finding time to use it, you know? But sort of moving on to the multi-instrumentalist side of things. So you mentioned that you play saxophone, guitar. I'm assuming you probably play bass as well. Would that be fair to say? Yeah.
Go on.
I was going to say, where did you have time to master all these instruments?
That's the thing. I don't master the instruments. If you want to really master an instrument, you need to play 8 hours a day. Because when I see a top guitar player or piano player, I am like, man, I wish I could play like that. But it's impossible. For example, saxophone, I can play saxophone. I'm a really super amateur. And when I record saxophone solos, I practice it hours and hours. I record 100 takes till it sounds good. So I can play saxophone in a live show. So, but that's the thing. I just choose to know a little of each instrument instead of being a master of one of them. It's impossible to master a lot of instruments.
Yeah, I agree. I think the general rule of thumb is it's what, 10,000 hours? And even then, it's not mastering, is it? You got invest 10,000 hours. I mean, trying to find 10,000 hours into one thing is a feat in itself. My next question was going to be about the artwork. So go looking through your releases, there is sort of cohesion, a link with all the artwork. Do you use the same artist for all of your releases?
Yeah, the same artist who is my wife.
Oh, amazing. Oh, that's so good. You're so lucky. Man. Because the artwork's amazing.
All the covers are designed by my wife.
Is she? Does she do it professionally, or is it just
she's
a side hustle?
She's an artist. She is not specialized in digital design. She's more a painter. But for the covers, I always came with a concept or I have an idea, and she helps me with Photoshop and all that kind of things. To get the idea,
amazing.
But it's all my wife.
It's impressive. They look so good. I strongly suggest the audience go and A, check out the music if you haven't done so already, and B, look at the artwork because it is so, so good.
Thank you. The covers is because I really love another, besides music, books are my passion. I really love reading. So I always that science fiction books from the 50s, 60s with those covers. So the Maxtor covers is some tribute to that kind of books.
Nice. Definitely, audience, go and check those out. They do look so, so good. So going back to right at the beginning, I mentioned that you do songwriting for documentaries and Spanish pop. How do you find the songwriting different? Or is it maybe it's the same? Is there similarities or are there differences? What are the differences between writing for... So when you say you're writing for Spanish pop, is that, I'm assuming that's pop artists? Are you a ghostwriter?
Yeah, not a ghostwriter because my name appears on the credits. So, but yeah, I work with Warner in Spain, with Warner Chappell. So yeah, I work with some pop artists like urban music, pop music, and I do like songwriting, production. I love that. It's really different from the Maxtor stuff, but as I told you, I love a lot of different music genres. So, yeah.
Nice. It must be a nice different thing sort of every day or two then, something different you're working on. A nice bit of variety.
Yeah. It's really different because when you're producing another artist's song, it's all about his or her vision. Like I have to help that person to get what he or he has in mind. So that's great. And
yeah,
it's really when you see that, that I don't know, it's like I don't feel that those pop tracks are like the work of another person. Is there's some about me in those tracks too. So
yeah. No, I totally agree. There's going to be an element of you in there as well, isn't it? Because you sort of contributed to it. How did you get into that then? Were you approached by labels, artists? Did they want to work with you? Or is it sort of like, did you send out, here's my portfolio of work, just for the audiences, for those interested in getting involved with like producing and working with other industries?
Yeah, well, I started, and I play in another project that is an electronic trio, electronic band. With Loy and Henry, friends, of old live friends here, and we play electronic music more like club music. We play in festivals, so we got signed by Warner, and they were looking for some writing production too, and they asked us, okay, who do you want to produce or who do you want to work with? And we say, there was a really popular band in Spain in the 80s called Mecano. And we say, we want, and the girl who sings there is Ana Torroja. And we say, we want to work with this girl. And the next day we were talking to her. And the last album, we produced almost the full album. And that was amazing. So, yeah, that's how it started. But sometimes I just... If I like an artist, I will suggest like text him or her in Instagram and hey, show your stuff and you don't need a label or a big publishing company to do that.
Yeah, no, that's refreshing to hear. I think and it's interesting to use Instagram. Is that sort of your main or one of your main sort of like communication platforms with other artists and fans and your audience? Is it mainly Instagram? Would you use other platforms?
Yeah, I use Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, but yeah, maybe Instagram is the main one. I don't really like being in social media all day. In fact, I only post every 2 weeks and I post when I have a new track release or something like really significant to communicate. But yeah, Instagram is really useful to communicate with your followers. But
yeah.
Not a big fan of... What I like is doing music in my studio. But you need to do all that kind of thing. You need to know about marketing. Nowadays, it's like that.
It's grim, isn't it? It's like, I find that. I mean, I try and have quite a strong social presence. And it is so time-consuming. Especially when I'm like, if I'm creating a video, like a tutorial video or something like that. So rather than actually making music, I'm sat recording myself talking about making music. I'm like, oh man, I really just want to be like finishing a song or finishing an EP, you know. But it's interesting you mentioned that because I was having this conversation with someone the other day and they were saying how they wanted to do a music production course. And I was kind of saying to them, I was like, that's all well and good. But you do realize like if you do a degree or a master's degree, if you do go down that route of music production, it's not just going to be you writing music for 2 years. You're not just gonna be jamming for 2 years and have a degree at the end of it. You do realize there's gonna be marketing, there's gonna be business, there's gonna be financial plan, there's gonna be business plans, forecasting, there's gonna be all sorts of other bits and pieces you have to do that I think people don't realize unless you're actually an artist and doing it all yourself.
Yeah.
It's time consuming.
You need to take care of everything, like the artwork, how I'm going to promote this, and It's crazy, but well, it's funny too.
I do like it. You got to know when to have time off, though, I find. Sometimes I struggle with that, to switch off. I don't know about you. But going on to, so what I'd like to just sort of like, we're coming towards the end of it now, is just to have a quick chat about your latest release. So it's called She's Out of This World. I'm assuming I've got that correct. Can you tell our audience a bit about what to expect from that song?
Okay, so the thing is, this year I just want to start releasing some singles, because people are asking me, when are you going to release an album or RVP? But I don't know yet. I like releasing singles, because you write them and 1 month after the song is made, you share it with people, and that's great because it's fresh stuff. So this one is more like the Italo Disco Maxtor days, with that Italo Disco beat I really like, with the bass switching between octaves. So that way, and there's a saxophone too, doing like a hook in the choruses. And yeah, I'm really happy with this one. It's really different from the Far Away track. I don't like to repeat the formulas, so I just want to explore different beats or something I haven't made in the past with Maxtor. Yeah.
Nah, it sounds exciting, mate. So for the audience listening, if this episode has aired after the 18th, that song was released on February the 18th. So it's going to be available on Bandcamp, Spotify, I'm assuming across all different streaming platforms. And what I'll do is, as I mentioned, I'll put in the description for this, obviously your links to social media and also the links to that latest release as well. So touching on social media, where can our audience find you online? Where's the best place to find you? We've mentioned Instagram. Do you have a website at all?
No, I don't have. I had a website, but it was useless for me in my case. So, because, I don't know, Bandcamp is very important to me, especially. It's a great place to communicate with your fans and to sell your music directly. So it's great. I still use Facebook, because it's a big, people is always complaining about Facebook, but some countries that really listen to Maxtor, like Russia and South American countries, they have a lot of presence in Facebook, so I use it a lot. Instagram, but yeah, I had the website, I didn't update it, and now it's gone.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? I find with my website, it's probably the last thing I ever go in and update. Can't remember the last time I did an update on it. But no, that's great. I'll put all those links in there. So just to round things off, Lewis, a massive thank you for joining me on this today. It's been great chatting with you. And I think it's going to be a fantastic first episode for Series 2 as well. A really, really good way to kick off the series. And I'm sure the audience listening will get a lot out of this episode as well. So yeah, good luck with the release. I'll look out for it. And I help share and promote it as well. And I'm looking forward to hearing it. And once again, a really big thank you for joining me today. And I'll speak to you soon, buddy.
Thank you for having me, man. It's been a pleasure. What super fun.
Yeah, no worries, mate. I'll speak to you soon. Cheers.
Bye, man.
Thank you so much for listening to the Inside the Mix podcast. Make sure to rate us everywhere you listen to podcasts, including Spotify. Whoa! Before you go, make sure to snag your free test master from Synth Music Mastering. Imagine enhancing your music with my steadfast dedication to quality and that personalized touch. And here's the kicker, it's absolutely free, no cost at all. Simply head over to synthmusicmastering.com or click the link in the episode description to claim your free test master.